to order, and we'll have a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2973. And Megan, would you like to tell us about the bill?
House Bill 2973, Chair Shannon, members of the committee, expands the grounds for exempting implements of husbandry from highway sign permits by including movement of an implement owned by a person hired by or under contract to a farmer to perform agricultural activities.
And isn't this your bill, Representative Starr? Okay. You want to come up, Bill, too? You're for it. And Don Schoenberg? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bruce Starr, State Representative District 3. House Bill 2973 is a simple bill that addresses an issue that actually affects more Oregonians than I originally thought it did. This issue came to us actually last session, for the end of the session, where I was working for my father at the time, and we had a constituent call during the waning days of the session. A constituent call and say, we've got this big problem. We're trying to move pea pickers from the state of Washington to the state of Oregon to get the crop harvested, and an ODOT flagged us down because of the highway regulations. Yeah,
right.
Pea picker is a machine.
I knew that.
Like a combine.
I used to drive a pea truck.
And so at last session, I worked with... Actually, I worked with Christina McNitt, a farm girl at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We found a bill that we could stuff language into that will address this issue. And the Senate actually passed that bill on July 4th.
Oh.
And I was here all day and night that day. Carried the bill back to the House to get concurrence because it was a House bill that had already passed. And it got lost in the last minutes and hours.
That's because you left the building about 3:30, or was it 2:30 a.m.?
Didn't leave anything.
You stayed till 5?
I was here.
Oh, that guy
was here all
you.
Night. Oh. It was actually my dad. But yeah, I was here actually. I worked. Mm-hmm. The reason I was here is because of that bill.
Okay.
And part of the problem was, anyway, the issue was addressed in a way last session, just didn't get all the way through the process. It's really a simple fix, and we also, in the House Transportation Committee, adopted the amendment that was brought to us by ODOT to clarify the language. I think it's a good amendment, a good change. I would urge your support of this bill. Move it forward. It came out of the House on a 53-0 vote, so it seems to have...
I want to ask you a question.
Support. Yes.
In the amended A1 version on page 2,
mm-hmm.
on line 27, it says, or if the owner is hired by or under contract to a farmer to perform agricultural activities.
Right.
Does that mean if a man's coming, a woman is coming down here from Washington State looking for a farmer, that wouldn't be legal?
No, I don't believe so. I think they have to actually be hired by or in contract with. As
somebody.
As the language states here. Okay. Just be driving their equipment down, hoping to find work.
Okay. Go ahead. You won. Bill.
Chair Senator Shannon and members of the Transportation Committee, I'm Bill Sewell, General Manager of National Coast and Food Corporation, and we're located in Albany, Oregon. Our company harvests and processes frozen and vegetables for sale throughout the world. We employ around 550 team members during processing season and have about 250 year-round working. Our company contracts acreage for these vegetables with the growers in the Willamette Valley, which represents close to 10,000 acres of vegetables. We harvest and haul these vegetables to our processing plant from the fields when crops are mature. With the constant movement of these large machines from farm to farm, we find it necessary to move this equipment by lowboy to certain areas depending on the distance. We need this exemption to minimize the impact of continuous permitting. In many instances, we load equipment and move it by truck as we would the impeding traffic if moved on the roads long distances. This bill, House Bill 2973, would provide the necessary relief and still provide for the safety of our highways. We have our own flight vehicles, overload signs, and all required safety devices required by Oregon state statutes. We support this legislation with a recommend due pass from this committee to the full Senate. And I thank you for the opportunity to be heard this evening. I'd be willing to answer any questions that the committee members can ask.
Any questions for Phil? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John Schallenberg, representing Morgan Farm Bureau. As farm costs and farm equipment continues to specialize and costs continue to soar, and I'm sure Senator George can attest to that, it becomes necessary in some cases for one farmer to own a piece of equipment and then do work for other surrounding farmers because they can't each afford to individually own that same piece of equipment. Then there's a situation where some enterprising person who's maybe probably been a farmer or aspires to be, they recognize the need of a service being provided to farmers, and so they purchase that piece of equipment and go into the business of doing the same thing that the farmers do. So you have that situation, and you have Mr. Keywall's situation you're talking about, where in fact the processing plant owns the equipment. And the language, Madam Chair, that you mentioned, that you referred to on page 2, is designed specifically to address that issue of where the processing plant, in fact, comes out and as a part of the contract with the crop does the harvesting. And so those are three situations where what they all have in common is that they actually cannot move their equipment on the road from field to field. Whereas the farmer himself, if he owns the machine, can move the equipment from field to field. So what this bill does is simply bring about actually what's reality today. In fact, these machines are being moved daily from field to field, and so it actually brings the law into conformance with what's actually going on out there. So the Farm Bureau would simply ask for your support for Senate or for House Bill 2973 and would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Don, would you?
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. On page 2, line 27, is only what Madam Chair has stated before. So does the word farmer apply to Bill Keywell's case when he is a company? I mean, does the word farmer cover definition for a food processing company?
Senator, I'll answer that. See, as long as we have a contract with the farmer, this language is provided for us.
Oh, so the word farmer includes processing companies.
If you're moving the equipment and you're under contract by the farmer to harvest that crop, that's what this language is intended to take care of.
So right, the administrative rule.
Exemption.
Oh, the administrative rule will cover it.
We'll clarify it if that's wrong.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, I think you're just perhaps a little confused. The farmer that's in line 27 is actually a farmer that definition does not apply to the processor. The processor is the one that owns the equipment and has to contract with a farmer or is hired by the farmer.
So in this case, Bill Keywell's company is the owner
of
the equipment.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But does that mean the company is hired by the farmer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, might inject here. There's two things here. The contract issue applies to Mr. Keywell.
Right.
His company is contracted with a farmer. The hire there applies to a person who does custom farming. And I hire somebody to come and combine my field. That's not a contract the same as Mr. Keywell's company has contracted with me to harvest other products. I hire an individual, my neighbor, to combine my field. And that's what the term hire there is designed to cover that situation. And Madam Chair, if I might continue, there aren't any administrative rules that I know of that are needed to implement this. The statute as it is will be sufficient.
Well, you've cleared up my confusion. Okay. You want to step back, Don? We'll have Steve Johnson come up here. I want to ask him a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Don't go too far. Okay. My question is, well, I'll let you testify. But if the person that's stopped by the ODOT or whomever, and they don't have the contract on them, you just verify be sure they had some kind of, he wasn't just roaming around looking for work.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Steve Johnson. I'm the manager of field services for the ODOT Motor Carrier Transportation Branch. The answer to your question is they probably wouldn't look if this bill passes. The odds of somebody going around with big machines looking for work are probably fairly remote.
Okay.
So we would just assume that there is a contract there.
Okay.
I won't read my testimony since I think my testimony is pretty much corresponds with Mr. Schellenberg. I would guess if you went back in history, though, if there had been custom farming and $150,000 and $200,000 implements of husbandry, the bill probably would have been written the way they're requesting it to be written today, because really what it's doing is making the statute more modern to where it's dealing with modern farming practices that probably didn't exist when the original statute was written.
Okay.
We see no additional harm to the public. These machines are currently out there. We don't think that by allowing them without the permit and on the same basis as we allow the farmer to have without a permit will do anything except enhance the farming business and make it easier for the enforcement officers as well.
Thank you. Question. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2973. Open a work session on House Bill 2973.
Madam
Chair?
Yes. I move House Bill 2973 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Having received a majority, a unanimous vote, it goes to the floor with a due pass, House Bill 2973. Senator Yee is carried. That'll take on that majority.
Okay. He's the sponsor.
This is Representative Stark and Shannon's names on it.
Oh.
But you may have it, Senator Yee. It's your father's here. Yes, thank you. Okay, this closes the work session. Did I close it on House Bill 2973? We will open a work session. Public hearing and work session on House Bill 2196. And, Philip Gatta, will you come and explain it to us? We are in a public hearing and work session.
Can
we do that?
Hearing first and work
session. Okay, we're in a public hearing.
Well, actually, Madam Chair, you should just open a work session. You've already had a public hearing, and I can just answer your question.
Okay, just a minute. We're going to hold that public hearing. We are in a work session on House Bill 2196, and we have invited Kelly Taylor. Okay.
I've been hanging out here way too much.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, Mr. Committee, I'm Kelly Taylor, Department of Transportation. You heard this bill back in March, and this bill makes a few changes to some of the suspension-related statutes, including some streamlining. And what the reason you didn't pass the bill that day, you were interested in the bill, but you wanted to make some changes, and I think they were solid changes. Those were in the Dash 1 amendments. Megan, are Dash 1s in their packet? I'm assuming they are.
It was a Dash 4.
Or are they Dash 4s, whatever they are. Can I see them to
make
sure?
Yeah, I thought that's what we had.
Okay. Just a good bill.
Megan, are they incorporated in the A and Gross version of the bill?
No. Madam Chair, Senator Castillo. The Dash 4 were committee amendments suggested. After I gave my testimony, the committee discussed the statute that talks about if you're convicted of a drug-related conviction, has nothing to do with driving. You could be at home, you could be somewhere else. Back in the 91 session, I think, the members were forced to adopt a federal rule at that time or lose money. The following session, they were allowed to pass a resolution to repeal it at any time or change it without loss of money. The feds changed their rules. And the session, then the members did that. And that resolution sat on file since then. That whole discussion came up in March, and the committee had said, we would like to repeal that. Not saying they're soft on drugs, they just didn't think that that type of offense needed to relate to a driving suspension. And since you had the ability to repeal it, you decided to enact that. And that's what the dashboards do. It keeps the bill with what I had brought forward with the other changes, but repeals the drug-related convictions equaling a suspension. That's what the dashboards do, and so I put those together at the committee's request. And this bill passed by a huge margin in the House. There was no opposition at all to it. So, good bill should pass.
Any questions? No questions? Okay. We are in a work session. Mm-hmm. Okay, I move the dash 4 amendment to House Bill 2196. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So move. It passes. Okay, I move House Bill 2196A as amended to the floor with a due pass. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Hi.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Having received a unanimous vote, it goes to the floor with a due pass. House Bill 2196A as amended. Do we have any volunteers? Well, Madam Kelly Taylor, help us with a speech.
I can help whoever carries this.
Okay. Anybody volunteer?
Okay.
And Senator Castillo will carry the bill. Close the work session on House Bill 2196. Now we are going to open a... Have we had a hearing on this one? We're going to have a public hearing, and here we go, on House Bill 2467. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Shannon, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kate Richardson. I'm legislative aide for Representative Lane Shetterly, and he is carrying something important on the House floor right now. I assure you it must be important.
Yeah.
This is a very small bill that came to us requested from two different constituents in our district. The Northwest Firefighters, who part of their business is a hazmat crew to remove hazardous materials after a spill. And the other is a medical examiner for Polk County and my family doctor. But the bill here is to bring, to give the hazmat crews and also medical examiners the authority to use warning lights on their vehicles. For the hazmat crew, their concern is primarily public safety, just being able to alert the site to have lights on so that passing vehicles will know that they're doing the job and so they'll slow down and they'll be able to get their work done in a safe manner. For our medical examiners, each county has a medical examiner in the state, and when there is an accident or a death investigation, the medical examiner needs to get to the scene usually before the scene can be released, and most of the medical examiners are not full-time and are just driving in their own vehicles. They get locked up in traffic. Don't want to break the law, so I am on the side, but they can't release the scene until the medical examiner gets there to release it, so we've got a catch-22, and this would just authorize them to put one of those handy lights on their vehicles.
Okay. Did the state police or anybody testify against it?
No, there's been no opposition whatsoever to this.
Okay, thanks. Any questions? Okay, this closes the public hearing on House Bill 2467, and we open a work session on House Bill 2467.
Madam Chair, I can tell you there was a few years ago, it was pretty restricted on who could use these. A lot of people use these today. It's very much enhanced the safety. There's no confusion between someone with these lights and say, a police officer. It's a good bill. I'd like to move House Bill 2467 to the floor with a due pass.
Discussion, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Is this a light that's easily installed?
I've used them phrase. You just take them and stick them on the roof. You have a magnet and plug them in the cigarette lighter.
And the wire goes through the
just
window?
Through the window or, you know, your phone that's around your door where your door closes.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they're available anywhere.
Oh, okay.
Okay, there we go. Okay, the clerk will call the roll. Oh, wait, did you move it? Yeah, you did. Okay. Okay.
Hi.
Aye. 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 Having received unanimous vote, it goes to the floor. House Bill 2467 goes to the floor with the due pass. Senator George, would you carry this? This closes the work session on House Bill 2467. And now we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1085. Have people signed up? Okay, Tom Lindstrom. Thanks, Tom. Ginny, Lang, Jim, come on. Okay. You may wonder why we have this bill.
Why?
David Delphine was backed up and couldn't hear it, and he came and asked me, and David said, sure, we're just not going to get to it. He's from Beaver Creek. He's almost a constituent, and so that's why it's here.
Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for Shannon and Senator Kessler, mm-hmm. Senator Yee, and Senator George. My name is Tom Lindstrom, and I'm here for a number of reasons, but, you know, I represent a cooperative that is member-owned, and Senate Bill 1085, basically, and it really in a nutshell, is a bill that clarifies language that is in place today in 759-225, and, you know, and the purpose, you know, of the bill is to help as the industry has changed, to make sure that the laws that are in place today follow with the change of the industry. And, you know, the frustrations that I have as a manager and also as a user of telecommunication services is that since the regulations of cooperatives and under House Bill 2200 as well as House Bill 2665 in 1987. We have a public agency, the Public Utilities Commission, that and its staff use different loopholes or attempt loopholes to try to regulate co-ops, which currently today under Oregon Revised Statute 62, that's been around a lot of years, that give, you know, our members a way to regulate the co-op and how it provides services and rates of services and basically in a nutshell, and this I could testify that in the 18 years that I've been there, when you have members that don't like something that you are doing, when they show up on your door and they ask for a change, it probably takes less than 30 seconds to process that change. Or, you know, our board would not be around, or even the management or the employees. So today, when the public does speak, they do speak, and it's really no different in a co-op than it is as your constituents come to you. And, you know, we've been dealing with these loopholes since 1987, and it gets real frustrating when you go to the commission or you go to a hearing officer and express your concern, take legislative history, show them what the laws, show them, for example, House Bill 2655 came about and how at the time Representative Beecher brought that to the committee and what the true intent was, and they tend to ignore that. It becomes really frustrating. And
It was his bill. And now he's on the PUC.
Now he's on the commission. And our question to them has always been, is the laws haven't changed since you carried this bill. and in testimony, and I gave you copies and I brought it to your staff, giving the testimony right from our state archives on what he just said the bill was for, and he said it was for a dispute resolution, and when there's a dispute, we would help determine the rate to make sure that both companies in the dispute would have their revenue requirement for carrying that services. If it's long distance, if it's operator services, yeah. Whatever.
Okay, here's the way it's explained to me today, okay? I know more about the bill now a little bit. Okay, and it's like, here is a, there are four circles, and here is a co-op telephone, telephone company here, Beaver Creek, here's one in Malala, Escada, and over here. And if you want to access AT&T, US West, MCI, you charge these companies no more than 5 cents.
In most cases, that's correct.
In most cases. And the PU, and then this company charges 2 cents, this company charges 4 cents, this company charges four, this company charges two, and you pay that all to the PUC. And they, and just a second, and then they say, well, that's an average of 3 cents, and so they pay all these people 3 cents, and if this bill passes, then up here Beaver Creek can raise their rate to 6 cents and 8 cents. And, of course, AT&T, MCI, US West, they want to work with these people, so they agree to it. But then it raises the rates for all these others that didn't raise their rates. Now, can you say that's not true? This bill will not do that?
Yes, Senator, I could say that without
doubt. Okay, that's what I want to know.
This bill is not about access. And I've given...
What's this bill about?
It is about closing the loopholes of when you have a regulator, that you have a law in place, when he could come to you, and when you have prior commissioners, and I'm giving you copies of prior commissioners after this bill was passed, that says, you know what's more better for your consumers than I do as a regulator, and then you have a representative who carried this bill, now comes back and says, I know what's better for you. And I'll give you an example. When we have expanded EAS into Portland, for instance.
Uh-huh.
Okay. We, when they come in and say, okay, let's expand Beaver Town or let's expand Malala, like the bill carried last year. Those are costs to expand that to our end users. The commission staff, without looking at our costs, you know, prejudged that you should be able to charge the ratepayer on a measured rate between 5 and 8 cents. How can you say 5 and 8 cents is a fair rate for everybody involved? It's not. And we, back when we expanded in the Portland region, we said, wait a minute, we come up with a new program as a co-op. Our board had developed it. We paid consultants to develop it and said we would like to introduce a plan called MetroCap and basically said that we would put a cap that our consumer would pay no more than X number of dollars, but we would charge you 1.7 cents per minute. Everybody else would charge an 8 cents. And the commission, was, and God bless Commissioner Riles, no longer with us, was one of the commissioners that stood up and said, wait a minute, this is co-op. If they could offer this service for 1.7 cents, why shouldn't they be allowed to do that? But yet you have the two other commissioners that saying, wait a minute, everything is not equal. And again, Senator Shannon, this is not about access. This is about a state agency trying to run the business of a co-op, of a low-cost co-op, and I've given you studies that USTA, which is a national agency that represents all the telephone companies nationwide, has shown over the last 5 years, this is an example, the last 5 years, access rates have dropped $9 billion nationwide. Toll rates have climbed 6 times. So it's not about reduction of access. It's not about a commission regulating our access rates. It has nothing to do with that. It's about continued control of a co-op. And if the commission wants the control of a co-op, we have no problem. They then should come to the Senate or the House and say, let's get rid of House or Senate or the revised statute 62. Let's don't make up the rules as we go. And that's where our frustrations are coming from, the making up the rules. And when our consumers come to us, and I've given you a couple of examples, where a lady who goes and makes the phone call from the payphone, because payphones are non-regulated by the commission, And she calls home to say, Mom, come and pick me up. And she's charged $9 for a 3-minute phone call, which if she would have put the quarter in there, she didn't have a quarter, she had to use a calling card. We charge 25 cents with that phone card. The competitor charges $9. That's where the problem is. They're trying to regulate the wrong people.
Okay, we have a call. We'll have a reset. Are we just going
to
release one?
Well, both of them need to come up. They're both trying to build strength.
Oh, okay. We moved them up to the top.
Yeah.
Do you mind? I'm sorry, but it's the last thing on my agenda, and I want to work the whole agenda. We'll go up, I'm sorry, and do our 3 or 4 bills, and then we'll come back. We moved it to the front of the agenda. Okay.
We only have two.
Two. Okay, there we go.
Did you
declare? Huh?
Did you declare?
Yeah, we're in recess. You two come back. Okay, thanks. Okay. And Chris, you went to get pizza, Megan.
Oh. Pizza's in our office.
Why don't we have pizza when we leave it?
Sam, the staff can get it. Senate Transportation. And to explain what's happened, they have given us, they moved our 2 bills to the end of session, and they have a quorum without us and everything. So, I'm going to reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 1085. Okay, and you're, go ahead, identify yourself again, Loretta.
My name is Tom Lindstrom, and I'm the president of Beaver Creek Cooperative Telephone Company.
Okay, and what exactly won't the PUC let you do that you need to do?
It's going back to the original legislation that was passed and the law that was signed by
the government. Well, did you have something to hand out?
It's a dispute resolution. Today, if you have a long-distance provider, I don't care who you are, U.S. West, AT&T, MCI, Sprint, if they have a dispute with Beaver Creek Telephone and don't agree with a rate, the law today, 759-220, provides them the ability to go to the commission and say, Beaver Creek's rate's incorrect, we would like you to look into the rate, and they come, they look into our rate, and if they say we don't agree with your rate, they could order us to reduce our rate or refund to our members or whatever, just like they would do with a long-distance provider. That's why I'm here to say it's not about ACTA. It's about dispute resolution. The co-ops, the 11
co-ops. I thought it was about regulating.
It is about regulating. It's about when there's a dispute. Let's say if Beaver Creek wants to reduce its rates to its members, which we have over the past.
Have they disputed that?
No.
Okay.
But let's say they wanted to dispute it. Right now, they would find a loophole to dispute it. And if you're doing a rate reduction, why would you dispute something like that? I mean, and even if today the Public Utilities Commission says you should charge X number of dollars for local rates, which they don't have jurisdiction over, but let's say EAS rates, our members would say, you're not going to charge that. You're going to charge your lower rate and take the difference out of the profit and allocate us less money back to us in earnings because everything we earn goes back to our members. We're a non-profit company. Out of the state of Oregon, there's 11 co-ops we represent. 2.5% of total access lines. Beaver Creek, and again, let's talk about the access rates, which you're going to hear from the commission staff or maybe some of the long-distance carriers. Access rates for intrastate represent less than 8% of Beaver Creek's revenues. If I were to increase my cost, 92% of those costs go to local and EAS rates. And so if I try to raise my rate, let's say 15% for access, it will go higher to local and EAS because 92% of my costs go to local and EAS first. And if my rate payers didn't like that, they would make me reduce that, which they've done before. You know, and that's right. It's a dispute resolution. It's about control of a co-op in which the state, the governor proclaimed that co-op's been around. There's just not telephone co-ops, there's electrical co-ops, Ace Hardware, there's food co-ops. And my question is, you have electrical co-ops today that are not regulated at all for rates or anything. There's no difference of a electrical co-op than a telephone co-op. So why should we have regulations when they don't? And again, we like the regulations that we have today. We feel that the laws that the prior Senate and the House and the governor signed is correct, and we feel that 759-220 is correct. We just need a few I's dotted and T's crossed because of what the commission is trying to do. Deep resolution and regulation. Thank you.
Okay, why don't you just stay there. Do you want to testify, please, Jenny?
My name is Jenny Wang. I represent U.S. Budget Communications, and I have just a few comments on Senate Bill 1085. U.S. Budget is generally supportive of the concepts incorporated in the Senate bill. With respect to the proposed amendments, which I believe you...
Yes, I do.
...have one amendment.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some questions about the extent, to what extent, if any, the rates, terms, and conditions of true services, and we may need to talk a little bit about what true services are, but Senator Shannon, you explained it pretty well, that it's the connecting of calls from one company to another, basically.
Those are through services. Okay.
And Tom may want to elaborate on that a little bit. Provided by unincorporated association or cooperative corporations to be subject to the guidelines established by the Public Utility Commission. And let me explain a little bit about that. We're concerned about the joint rates and true services provided by associations or co-ops because U.S. West is the carrier of last resort for intra-LATA toll services. And the LATA, if you look in the front of your phone book, you'll see a map, and LATA is the local access transport area. And they were set up at the divestiture of the Bell system. We may carry calls within a LATA. We can't carry calls between them. So as bizarre as this sounds, we can carry a telephone call from Longview, Washington to Burns, but we cannot carry a telephone call between Salem and Eugene because of these boundaries that are called LATA. So we are the carrier of last resort for intra-LATA toll services for the majority of the incumbent local exchange carriers, companies like Tom's and others in the state. As an intra-LATA toll carrier, we pay the access rates of the incumbent local exchange carriers, including the associations and cooperative corporations, the access fees that Tom was talking about. These rates reflect guidelines that were stipulated to by members of the telecommunications industry and were approved by the commission. Our concern is whether it's really clear in the legislation that these or future guidelines would apply to the associations and co-ops. Mr. Lindstrom has assured us that it is not his intention to circumvent these guidelines. And as usual, there's always a little bit of a worry about what happens when Tom's not at the helm and somebody else is. But we would like to continue to work with him to make sure that the language is tight enough to ensure that those guidelines can't be circumvented. We had similar questions about the application of the guidelines and intercompany billing for extended area services between unincorporated associations or co-ops. But as I said, we would be more than happy to continue to explore making sure that our concerns are met.
Do you have questions, Andrew? Well, okay, just don't go too far with me. John Powell is going to testify for his friend AT&T. Yeah. And Paul Negers and Cynthia are with CUC Plus. Phil, I'm sorry, Phil. Didn't mean sorry, Paul. And John, did you want to come too? I need to ask you a question.
Oh,
Jenny has been talking to Tom and seeing to get understanding. Have you talked with Tom, the one that requested the bill?
Chair Shannon, members of the committee, yes, we have had discussions with Mr. Lindstrom, but have been unable to work out our differences.
And have you seen the dash one?
Yes. In fact, that's what I was wanted to testify to, Chair Shannon. Okay.
And do you know if AT&T, Mr. Powell, has been talking with Mr. Winston?
My name is John Powell, this evening representing AT&T. Madam Chair, all I know is that Laura Imason, who I'm here in place of this evening, has discussed at least some aspect of this bill with him.
Okay.
But I don't know to what extent, because I was not present.
Sure. Okay.
She did mention that they had talked about whether she's going to be here anyway.
Okay.
I don't know what, how deeply.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
Good evening, Chair Shannon and members of the committee. I am Phil Nygaard. I am the administrator of the telecommunications division at PUC, and with me is Cynthia Van Landijk, who's the manager of cost analyses in the telecommunications division. And before I begin my testimony, I would like to clarify one point that Mr. Lindstrom addressed. He talked at some length about an ongoing dispute he's had with the PUC, and I will certainly agree with him that we have had a long-standing dispute. What he failed to mention, though, is that argument has gone all the way to the Court of Appeals, where it was heard about 6 weeks ago. Our expectation is that the Court of Appeals may even act before the session is over. If Mr. Lindstrom is correct in his interpretation of current law, this bill is unnecessary. The Commission feels strongly that he isn't, but we thought the Commission or the committee ought to know that this is in the courts. And so we don't feel the need to get into a debate about what current law says because we've already had that debate at the Court of Appeals. And with that, I'll begin my testimony. The Commission is opposed to Senate Bill 1085 primarily because it would significantly harm Oregon's rural long-distance customers. In order to understand why, the committee needs to understand two facts. The first is that Oregon currently has uniform long-distance rates, which is made possible by the pooling of costs incurred by most small telecommunications companies. These costs are paid by long-distance companies such as AT&T and NCI through charges known as access charges. The second fact that's important to know is that long-distance companies are customers of small telcos, including the co-ops, because they pay them access charges. Under current law, long-distance carriers rely on the PUC to make sure that the access charges they pay are reasonable. Now you may ask, what do these facts have to do with Senate Bill 1085? The answer lies in an examination of the fundamental results of the bill, which is to eliminate PUC oversight over cooperative telecommunications companies. This lack of oversight will create a strong incentive for Oregon's 11 co-ops to drop out of the pool I just mentioned because they would be free to charge any access charge they desire. How would long-distance companies, who are co-op customers, respond to having to pay higher access charges? Since they could no longer come to the PUC for help, they would react in one of two ways. First, they might insist that they be allowed to charge higher rates to co-op customers who live in rural areas. This would be done by asking the PUC to de-average long-distance rates, which would be harmful to rural telecommunications customers. Second, long-distance companies might seek to abandon service to high-cost areas.
I want to ask you a question. You realize that co-op is owned by the people. Why would they want to run up their own phone bill?
I'm only referring to the charges paid, the access charges paid by companies like AT&T and MCI.
I thought you said that this would hurt rural telephone users. Why would they want to hurt themselves? They own the telephone company. The co-op is owned by the people whose phones in their home.
Chair Shannon, I'm certain the intent is not to harm themselves. What I'm attempting to point out is by charging the long-distance carriers higher charges for use of their facilities, the co-ops would encourage the long-distance companies in turn to raise their own rates, which would be paid by the customers of the co-ops.
Right. So why would they do that? They're doing this to keep their rates down. Why? I mean, this is brought, the board decided they wanted this. They want that freedom. Why would they, I mean, it wasn't just Mr. Tom Lindstrom. The people that own the telephone company, if phones are in their own homes, They want this. Why would they be coming to do what you say to raise their own long-distance rate? Why would they make a decision if the decision they made to charge the telephone companies more to use their line resulted in raising their own long-distance rate? That would be self-defeating. Am I missing something?
Chair Shannon, if they understood it that way, that might be correct. My guess is that the average co-op customer has no idea any of this is going on.
Oh. They audit themselves. They know. I know the people in the Malala one have lunch with them, dinner with them, fill up a whole place. There's a community out there. They know. They know. They are my husband was on one of these audit committees. They don't hire auditors. They go through the books themselves, a team of them. I don't know why, and I've only been into this 10 minutes, and I've already figured out that you're trying to tell me that somebody in the main office is going to make it. These are like family. This is Beaver Creek Telephone. Doesn't go into Canby, doesn't go into Malala. It's Beaver Creek. And if they think that they're going to do something to raise their long-distance rates, I assure you they're doing this to get a better deal.
I'm sure, Shannon, I don't understand how this is going to give them a better deal. And
most regulators don't. They don't think that they're not in control it can get any better. But I know these people. They are not here for me to allow them to increase their long-distance phone rates. I can assure you that. And they're not ignorant. Have you ever seen their billing? You know, like happy birthday, you know, the stuff they put in their billings, it's all local. They can fill it up to the limit. You can tell about the baked pie sale. This is not somebody in the, the school. They're raising money for the Cub Scouts. This is not somebody in downtown Portland making a decision and everybody else is going to have to go along with it. This is a family. You have been to one of the meetings?
Chair Shannon, no, I have not.
You ought to. Okay. Okay.
Senate Bill 1085 affects only cooperative telecommunications companies. However, if it becomes law, the legislature should assume that in the next session, the small companies who are not co-ops will seek freedom from the PUC oversight as well. If Senate Bill 1085 becomes law, there would be no obvious reason to tell other companies no. If all companies are set free, pooling will end, average long-distance rates will end, long-distance routes will be abandoned, and rural Oregon will be a big loser. The Commission also notes that if Senate Bill 1085 becomes law, PUC would not be able to establish new extended area service routes involving co-ops. Affected customers would have to come directly to the legislature to get EAS service. In summary, the Commission opposes Senate Bill 1085 because of a likely harm to rural Oregon.
Do you know why the legislature did EAS last time from Senator Dukes' district into Portland and from mine, Malala, in? It's because you guys wouldn't do it.
Senator Chan, I'm aware.
Very aware. The evidence was all there, and it was in time, due time. I'm so glad you're sitting here. We had to rush a priority bill at the end of it, and it hasn't hurt a thing. It's been wonderful. Every time I go to Malala, they thank me for the legislature doing what the PUC refused to do. You had to keep studying it. Mr. Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And for the record, my name is John Powell, representing AT&T. Laura Imason, who would be much more articulate with this subject and has a much better knowledge of the subject area, had a prior commitment and due to the change in time was unable to be here this evening. I have handed in a letter from her for the committee and would simply like to cover a few of the points in that letter. I think one of the main concerns from the long-distance provider point of view is that the services that we are talking about are still a monopoly-provided services, and particularly in rural settings where cooperatives are the most prevalent. And whether these are guided by a local board or not, the fact that they are still in a monopoly situation, we believe
warrants at least oversight from the PUC. As the previous witness had discussed, one of the alternatives a long-distance carrier will have is to request from the PUC to be de-averaged. And by doing that, the result of de-averaging is that the rural customer would actually pay more to call into the urban area than the urban customer would pay to call back into that rural district. Some of the reasons for that a co-op might do something like that is that it would increase their revenues in a way that is maybe less hostile in a political sense in their local environment. At the same time, we believe that those costs and that area of access charges should be fairly charged to the long-distance providers. So we believe that Senate Bill 1085 raises a host of consumer protection issues with appropriate jurisdictions over these charges, that the PUC cannot stop any kind of potential monopoly pricing. And, you know, we think it would make sense in the case of a cooperative where the charge differential only affected those customers and not a customer such as us, and as was previously disclosed, we are a customer here. And so if the area of the law that involves just the people who have a voice in the utility, we can understand why that would be deregulated, and we have no problem with that. But where it involves customers who have to pay to that utility who do not have a voice in the governance of that utility, we believe the PUC should have oversight.
Right. And do you know how long it took Senator Duke's people to plead, beg, and plead for ESA till the PUC decided that it was going to be fair enough? They never did. She had to come down here, and then we had to work with, because they never, out there, you know, give us 2 years, we got to study this, got to make it fair to everybody, we got to, and 2 more years, and finally we did it, and it's working fantastic. You can call Beaverton from Malala. It's absolutely working fantastic. And to think that this little co-op is going to make a decision that's going to raise up their rates or these others when they see everybody at the same grocery store. They see each other at the basketball game. I mean, it is not. Their decision makers don't live in Portland or Candy. They live in Beaver Creek. And they all see each other. And if I had just an ounce more confidence in the PUC, then they would responded to people and responded to these things, then I would just say I wouldn't even have heard the bill. But I agree with you.
I believe my testimony is consistent with your beliefs, and that is, for customers who are involved and see each other at the store, we could agree that deregulation of the system as it relates to them would be good public policy. I think in terms of how it relates to customers who are not part of that, AT&T being one of those.
And U.S. West.
And U.S. West.
Right. And MCI, who's not here to testify against it. And you're just concerned about what could happen, might happen. And I think that I wish you were here, because I don't hold you accountable, Mr. Powell, but I wish that they would be, nothing would ever change if you were always afraid of giving people control of their own destiny. And believe me, I understand that if they suddenly charge 10 cents access, what that will do to these other people. But I fully believe it's not their intent to raise rates. They're doing this to compete and lower rates. And, of course, you know, that's the difference between free enterprise kind of and government regulators, in my opinion. Did you want to say something? Do you have a question? This is Senator Yee.
So are you advocating is the oversight, but leave the co-op continue the way it is?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, we would advocate that this bill is not necessary because what it does is it removes the authority of the PUC over to regulate the access rates, which in turn affects the long distance carrier as a customer who has to pay those rates. And because we are not part of the governing body of the co-op, we'd be a customer that would pay those rates with little or no appeal rights, and for our customers that we have to pass those cost onto.
What do you think? Could it have been AT&T and the MCI and the others that were getting those long distance rates from Olala to Portland that helped drag the feet? So Astoria and Ms. Senator Duke, I don't know if it went as far as Astoria, but I know it was up in her district. I don't suppose they support that extended service, do they? So AT&T, do you think they supported extended service that we had to fight so hard for?
Senator Shannon, I don't know, other than my understanding of the delivery of extended service is that you basically pay the same, it's simply molded into the rates.
Average
in a different methodology. I don't think AT&T would oppose a particular EAF based on those factors.
Well, something was driving me too. Do you have any questions on this bill, Senator?
I can read this stuff and go back and forth. So,
I could close the public hearing and we could just go upstairs if you want to think about it. Did you want to work it?
I think I'm a no.
Okay. What do you think, Senator Yee?
I'm a no, too.
You're a no.
Where are we as far as time, Madam Chair?
We're at the end.
This is it. Okay. Well, if yes, you know, we're troubling.
No, let's go get checked. But just a minute. Tom, would you like to come and respond to anything that's been said?
That's what I'm thinking about, yeah.
Right. Okay, sure. Come on out.
Could we have one seat or two? Or what?
Sure. Okay. At least, yeah, go ahead. Identify yourself, Tom. Again.
My name is Tom Lindstrom, and I'm the CEO President of Beaver Creek Cooperative Telephone Company. I'd like to address a couple issues and in the sports. And I give you some examples. And let's talk about Molala, Senator Shannon, yes, to help expand EAS. And these are the facts. You know, they're just plain and simple. When my customers called Molala telephone from Beaver Creek to Molala, it was long distance. The carriers that carried that long distance charged my customers an average toll rate today between 18 and 25 cents a minute.
And the PUC gave you no relief.
No relief. Today, my customers call Molala for 2.7 cents a minute. How can long distance cost 18 to 25 cents a minute and EAS rates cost 2.7 cents a minute? If a co-op was going to take advantage of its customers, why did our rates drop to 2.7 cents a minute versus staying at 18 to 25 cents a minute? And also, Senator Shannon, and I handed out this fact sheet in a study that was paid for by USA that in 1998, and AT&T was the number one abuser, that access charges were reduced in 1998 by 7 to 10%. Toll rates increased between 13 and 23%. AT&T, MCI, and Sprint saw a windfall in 1998 of $850 million on ratepayers today. This bill does not take the ability away from AT&T, MCI, Sprint, US West. If they believe that our access rates are too high, and if this bill was about access rates, just like anybody else, they could file a complaint and the PUC can hear it, review our costs, and ask us to reduce our costs. Today, if you read, and in this book that I hand out to your committee members, if you review 759-220, this bill does not address 759-220. And it states very clearly in 759-220 that the commission on a complaint can review costs. A commission on its own accord without a complaint can review costs. We're not asking to change 759-220. We're asking to change 759-225. And you've heard tonight about access. What about EAS? EAS is not access. It's extended area service. It's local dialing. Yet the commission feels that they have their authority when there's no shared cost to tell me what I should charge my customers for EAS rates. That is not access. It's local calling. So someone's got a dual standard here. And all we want to know is what the law is. We ask, you know, as you senators today, help us with the law. Make the law clear, and let's play by all the same rules. That's all I'm asking. If you don't want this bill, that's fine, but then have the commission play by the rules in which the law is in place today. We want to play by the same rules, and every time we turn a corner and reduce our costs, we want the ability to do that. And I'll make one more comment. In a meeting today at OTA, Jeffrey Kagan, who is a national analyst, you know, the Oregon, he quotes him, all these big papers across the United States quotes him, he has authority on telecommunications. He flat out said, the rural customers of the United States got to understand that when they live out in rural America, they're not going to have all these luxuries as you would in downtown. They have to understand that. You choose to live out in rural America, it's going to cost you farther to drive into the store, it's going to cost you extra. But I'm here to tell you about the Oregon Co-op. We as Oregon Co-op have more services today, more infrastructure built today. I have fiber to the curb. I have wideband area services where my customers get onto the internet in seconds, not 15, 20 minutes. We're offering DSL services. We're also going to be offering cable modems. We have high-speed internet. This is Co-op. We want to be able to continue to offer these services to our members, but when I spend thousands, or tens of thousands, or hundreds of thousands of all the co-ops on a yearly basis because of regulation, how am I going to provide these services to my members? I'm spending my money over being regulated, so I can't increase my infrastructure. All I want is the rules that are fair and equitable, and you live by them.
Okay, and it is not your intention to raise your access so that everybody else's goes up?
No. Madam Chair, in the back of this book that I gave you, and I gave you an example, one simple example, that basically states this is the total access minutes for the state of Oregon as of 1997 filed with the Public Utilities Commission. As an example, it says, if the carriers want us to raise their toll rates by one penny, let's say you're paying 25 cents a minute now, they want us to raise that to 26 cents a minute. Based on that 1 cent change, the 11 co-ops would have to increase their revenue requirement or access charges 212%. And the way we allocate our costs mandated by the FCC, and also, this is one point I just thought of, we borrow money from the federal government as rural communication providers, and our loans are required that says if we do not follow the rules of the FCC and the Telecommunications Act of 1996, they can rescind our loans. And if we don't have those loans, and these are very favorable rates, we would be out of business. So, again, we're being regulated by the FCC. We don't need states. But to show you, if I raise my rate of 212%, what would that do to my local EAS rates?
What do you think my members are going to do? It's not about access. It's about control.
Okay. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1085 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1085. What about the Dash 1 Amendment?
We're asking that the Senate approve the Dash 1 Amendment as submitted to prepare a co-op back into the hands of our board, which today are.
And U.S. West, did you support the Dash 1? Okay. Senator George?
Sure. I move Dash 1 Amendment to Senate Bill 1085.
Is there any discussion? Any opposition?
Well, what does the Dash 1 do?
What does it do that the regular bill doesn't do?
It basically what it does is says that if there's a food service that is going safe and it's a cooling environment, that the commission has authority over when you're in a cool environment. If you're not part of the pool and you have a food service but not a joint rate, I would then file my tariff with the commission, and if one of these long-distance carriers did not agree with that rate, they could then ask the commission for a hearing and adjust my rate accordingly.
And why do you say no? Have you read the Dash 1?
Yes, we have, Chair Shannon. In fact, that's what my testimony is directed to. The original version of the bill would have eliminated PUC oversight over all companies, not just co-ops, so I was addressing the Dash 1. We just don't see how one can read the Dash 1 Amendment to allow a company like AT&T to file a complaint about access charges and allow the PUC to investigate and change those access charges if they conclude they're unreasonable. We don't see how it can be read that way.
Okay, Tom, what line gives the PUC the authority?
It's 759-220.
No, in the Dash 1.
In the Dash 1, it's addressing the ORS 759-225. It does not address what Mr. Nygaard is saying that takes that authority away from the commission. He's talking about an existing law that we're not even talking about in this. This is 759-225.
Okay.
We're asking changes to 759-225 only. And if you give me a second, I could pull 759-220 and read you the current language, and I would like to have my guard respond about how that changes that.
You know what? I take your word for it. Who want to get up there? Do you have questions?
Well, I'd like to hear it. But
okay, go ahead.
Give me 1 second to find it.
If you still have authority over pool rates, wouldn't that weaken some of your opposition?
Sure, Shannon, if that were the case, we wouldn't be here at all.
Thanks. Well, let's fight it.
759-220, Section 2, Subsection 2.
What page are you on?
I'm on page. It's in this little book. It's in blue sheet number. It's behind the second blue sheet in the book.
Okay, here we go. Behind the second blue sheet. Is it a page number?
You told me regulation.
78.
Page 78.
Let's look at that. There it is, right there.
Okay.
Are you right? Highlight it?
Yes, highlight it. 759-220, okay. Joint rates and classification procedures and consideration. Subsection 2. The Public Utilities Commission may and shall, whenever deemed by the Commission to be necessary or desirable in the public's interest, after full hearing upon a complaint, or upon the Commission's own initiative, without complaint, establish due services, classifications, and joint rates. The division of such rates and the terms and conditions under which such true services shall be rendered. If any tariff or schedule canceling any true service or joint rate or classification without consent of all the telecommunication utilities, party thereof, or authorization by the Commission, is suspended by the Commission for investigation, the burden of proof is on the telecommunications utility proposing such calculation to show that it's consistent.
And that remains, because I see here you said delete that part.
We delete that part.
Okay, now what do you think?
Senator Shannon, members of the committee, I believe I can explain why we disagree with that interpretation. And I don't know if we all have the same document. This was the document that I was given and was told it was the Dash 1.
No. Well, I'm sorry. Let's give you a new Dash 1. Pardon me. You ready? See what, just 1 second?
We're just about there.
You'll see, we have deleted that. I'm sorry.
I think I can still explain. Okay, you got the news. Yeah. Okay. Mr. Lindstrom informed me that what I have is what he is proposing. Right? On the basis that I believe I can explain why his interpretation is not correct. In 759.225, I guess I'll look at that. It's line 6 of the proposed amendment, SB 1085-1, where it says, in line 23, delete regulate and insert approve and delete through service. The word approve is significant because it applies to joint rates. So it now says it's proposed, notwithstanding any other provision of law or 759.220 applies to any unincorporated association. I'm going to skip over that. Just say he's talking about co-ops providing interstate, intrastate telecommunication service only to the extent necessary for the PUC to approve joint rates. The word used to say deregulate. Now it says approve. Now there are two.
What's the difference? It has to have your approval or your regulation.
Regulate, as we read it at least, gives us the authority to approve, disapprove, or modify. This is specific. We can only approve. But to fully understand my point, we need to continue, Chair Shannon, with the new subsections that are proposed to 759.225. The new subsection 2 says, basically what it says is that a joint rate is only a joint rate if it's part of a pooling process. I referred to this pool previously, and section 3, which talks about through services, says a rate for a through service is a joint rate only if it meets the definition set forth in subsection 2. So a rate for a through service is a joint rate only if it's done through pooling. Now, since this bill, as proposed, would allow a co-op to opt out of the pool, and since the PUC is only allowed to approve a joint rate filing, not deny or modify, the fact that the language up here in subsection 1 says that a complaint can be filed doesn't mean anything because there isn't anything we could do about it, even if the complaint was filed.
Go ahead.
In section 3 of 759.220, it basically says, whenever after a full hearing upon a complaint or upon the commission's own initiative without complaint, the commission is of the opinion that the division of joint rates between the telecommunications utilities are or will be unjust, unreasonable, or inequitable, or unduly preferential or prejudiced as between the telecommunications utilities and the party thereof. It says that they should divide the weights equitable.
And it doesn't, your bill does not remove that.
Absolutely not.
Senator Shannon, this is interesting to me. Mr. Lindstrom has always taken the position that 759.220 does not apply to co-ops. So it's
well, he's still in the law.
Well, he's argued at the Court of Appeals that it doesn't apply to co-ops.
Well, you're sure you're going to win that one, so... Okay. Well, it appears to me, reading what was just been said, that it doesn't go forward if you don't approve it. You can approve it, and if you don't, there's nothing there. And besides, that other language is not removed.
Senator Shannon, I hope the legislative record will show that, because
I do too.
That isn't our understanding of what the bill does. It would be helpful if that's the intent of the bill.
You mind if we read that into the record as a legislative intent? Okay. That it is the intent that they still approve or disapprove the pool. Right.
And may I ask for further clarification?
Sure.
Is it the intent of the bill that if, say, AT&T comes to the PUC and says that we believe our access charge from a co-op is unreasonable, that the PUC has the authority to request information to investigate and adjust the access charge?
If it's pooled, it definitely, because it affects other co-ops. Otherwise, it's between that co-op and AT&T. Why would you care? AT&T won't give them the service if it's too high. And it doesn't affect another co-op. It's not pooled. You are there if it's pooled. Otherwise, his neighbors can beat him up at the grocery store.
Senator Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
Today with competition and long distance, our customers today have a choice of hundreds of long distance
That's
providers.
Right. That's right.
And if AT&T wanted to cancel our services today, mm-hmm. I'm sure I could find 199 that will offer just as good.
Mm-hmm. You can't regulate every distance. And if they affect other people's rates, you be there. I agree. Okay, go ahead. Do you want to move it? Do
you Oh, yeah. Thank you. Okay. Let's cover that up.
Okay,
for your order.
Okay, you want to move the dash one? Or?
I moved the dash one.
Okay, we did already. I know. Is there any opposition?
Aye.
Okay. Didn't we move them, though? Okay, she opposed. Okay.
Yes,
clerk will call the roll. This one, right now.
No.
I know. Okay.
Yep. Aye.
Okay. Aye. We're voting. Go find the voting. And we're coming. Okay. Aye.
Aye.
There you.
No.
Hi.
The amendments are adopted.
Madam Chairman, I'll move Senate Bill 1085 as amended to the floor of the two staff recommendations and volunteer to Senator George to chair the bill.
All right.
Okay. Senator Senator.
Okay. Okay. The clerk will call the roll.
Thank
you. Hi. No. All right. Having received the majority, it will go to the floor. The Supreme Council has amended.
You have the right to change my vote later. I'll change it on the floor.
You have the right to change to a yes. Okay. Thank you. The work session on Senate Bill 1085 is complete. And we adjourn the meeting, and I will see you next.
Thank you.
And we adjourn. And I, when's our next meeting?